I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Sharon Bala joins me now. Her debut novel, The Boat People, is one of the more anticipated books of the season, one that has already gotten good notices. Mahinden is one of 500 fellow refugees who flee Sri Lanka's bloody civil war via ship for Canada's shore. He and his six-year-old son think once here they'll begin a new life. However, they're soon thrown in prison and detained. The so-called boat people face suspicion. In the book, Mahinden is represented reluctantly by a second-generation Sri Lankan-Canadian Priya. Another character is Grace, a third-generation Japanese-Canadian adjudicator who must decide Mahinden's fate. I'll get Ms. Bala, who joins me now, to tell us about her book, these characters, and those that seek asylum that are in this book. Sharon Bala lives in St. John's, Newfoundland, but she joined me from here in Vancouver last week while in town for an appearance with the Vancouver Writers' Fest's Insight series. She's a member of the Port Authority Writing Group. Visit SharonBala.com for more. The book is published by McClelland & Stewart. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Sharon Bala. Ms. Bala, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. I'm looking forward to reading this book because it's obviously something that a lot of Canadians are thinking about, especially now as a lot of people are seeking asylum, seeking refuge here in this country. When was it that you started the book, and what were you thinking about at the time that you were starting to write The Boat People?
I started this book in July of 2013, and I really began with research. And I did about 6 months of research, and then at the beginning of 2014, I made a New Year's resolution to finish the first draft of the book. Which is the kind of audacious thing you can do only as a first-time writer, because you just don't know any better. But there was a prize, the Percy James First Novel Award, which is given out every year in Newfoundland and Labrador to an unpublished manuscript. And the due date for that was the end of November, so I really wanted to be able to submit to that. But I guess what I was thinking about was actually at first I wasn't even thinking about refugees so much. Uh-huh. I originally envisioned this book as being a book about a large, multi-generational Sri Lankan-Canadian family. And I thought it would be interesting if there was this boat that had come and it was on the other side of the country. I had originally planned to set the story in Toronto and have the boat come. And then have it be a thing that characters talked about and commented about. And I thought it would be interesting to explore the opinions and reactions of different generations of this family. But then I decided that in researching the actual boat, so this book is inspired by the arrival of the MV Sunsea, researching that, it became clear to me that at least one of the characters would have to be someone on the boat. And then when I did that, I had to physically move the story to Vancouver. This is all at the beginning, so I hadn't actually written a word yet.
Yeah.
But then once I relocated the story here, and one of the characters, this character Mahinden, who was on the boat, then the whole thing changed. And it was not anymore about this multi-generational family. That whole family ceased to exist. And it was really then a story about one man trying to get himself and his child to safety. And then, he really became the center of the book.
Yeah, so Mahinden and his son come to Canada. And what's he like?
So Mahinden, it's interesting because Mahinden is the unlikely sort of protagonist of this story because he's the kind of man who's very happy to let other people lead his life for him and make decisions. And he just kind of goes along with things. And he's, I think of him very much as being an introvert. He's a mechanic. He's taken over from his father and owns his own shop, and he is very happy to do the kind of work he does. And there's one thing about him that's very different from most of the other people in his community, which is that there's a great culture of haggling, and there's no such thing as a set price or a fixed price in Sri Lanka. The price is always up for discussion. Mm-hmm. But Mahinden is really, really uncomfortable with this and really sort of hates this. And so in his own business, he actually has set prices, and people get used to it and they go along with it. So this, to me, is Mahinden. someone who is not comfortable with anything that's uncertain or anything that he has to negotiate for himself.
Yeah.
And then through the course of the book, so the book takes place, the timeline of the book is 2009 to 2010, it's 1 year, but the book takes place, but through the book, I make these flashbacks into Sri Lanka from about 2002 on.
Mm.
And I realized that I had to take Mahinden on not just a physical journey, but on an emotional journey as well. And he had to somehow change as a character. And so as the situation in Sri Lanka is becoming more and more dire, as he starts losing members of his family, in the end, it's just him and his son. And he has to make decisions and he has to negotiate things and he has to take the reins of his life, which previously he was just happy to go with the flow. And so he really changes as a character, and in some ways he becomes more, I don't want to ruin this for
readers who
haven't read it yet, but he becomes, he starts to do more questionable things because he has to. You know, when it's life and death, then you start to do things that maybe you wouldn't have thought you were capable of before. And this can be a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, in his case, he begins the book in being one kind of person, and he ends being, in some ways, a very different kind of person.
So he makes his way to Canada, and like a lot of people, you know, were there 500 people on that boat?
In my book, it was 503. In real life, it was 492.
I see. Yeah. So I mean, people that take that journey to come here, I mean, their expectations, I guess, as to how they'll be received in this country. How is Mahinden and his young son, how are they received? And I guess it's very different than what they expected, right?
Oh, yes. He's so naive. You know, when he's in Sri Lanka in this prison camp at the end of the war, and a rumor starts that there's a boat, we can get on this boat and we can get out. And he doesn't know where the boat's going, and he does not care. In that moment, all he knows is that if he stays, the odds are good that he's going to die. And so he will go anywhere. And so he gets on this boat, and then they're coming close to shore. And then the question is, who is going to stop them? Because they know they're going to be intercepted. And it's a question of the Americans or the Canadians. And this is something I got from a newspaper report of the real boat, the MV Sunsea. I read somewhere that when they were getting close, they weren't sure who was going to intercept them. And they were really hoping that it would be, they were really hoping that it would be Canada, because they had this idea that Canada was a gentler country, a place that was more open and welcoming. And, I mean, there are something like 200,000 Tamil people here. Like, the biggest part of the Tamil diaspora has actually come to Canada.
Yeah.
And so that's what they... So when they are in the opening scene, they're on the boat and they're coming close to shore and they see that it's Canadian flags coming for them. They cheer because they think, oh, thank God, we've come to the good country.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they're immediately taken in handcuffs and put into jail, and Mahinden is separated from his son. And that's not something he could have ever imagined was going to happen. But for a long time in the book, he keeps thinking, he has so much faith in Canada, and this country that he knows nothing about, ironically, he has so much faith, and he's thinking, it's okay, it's fine, this is just bureaucracy and paperwork, and there are so many of us, and they will figure it out with time, and they will eventually reunite me with my son.
Yeah.
But of course, as time goes on, as the book goes on, his hope starts to fade.
Yeah. And I guess in the process of your research, you found out that it's quite a prohibitive process that these people seeking asylum. I mean, they're screened. I mean, overly so, right?
It really, what I discovered is that the refugee system, there is the law of it. There's the process that's in place and is pretty clear, and then there's the way that it's carried out. And sometimes those are two very different things, and how hard the system is on you and how closely you are screened. And, well, I shouldn't say how closely you are screened. I'll say whether you are assumed to be someone who's a criminal or whether you are assumed to be someone who's an asylum seeker really depends not on where you come from or the circumstances of what you are fleeing, but more, when do you arrive and what mood is the country in?
Mm.
So in the process of when I started writing this book, I live in St. John's, Newfoundland. When I started writing this book about, and I was telling people I'm writing about this book of Tamil refugees, or this boatload of Tamil refugees, they said, oh, are you talking about ours, our Tamils who came here in 86? And I said, no, what's that about? And I went and did some research. And I found that in 1986, in August, there was this boat of Tamil refugees, and they had been let off the boat and put into life rafts, and they were found floating in the North Atlantic. There were about 150 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these were asylum seekers fleeing the same war. And the way that they were treated is so different. And there was a lot of media circus around them, and everyone looked to the Prime Minister, Mulroney, at the time to see what he was going to do. And he said, if we err, let it be on the side of compassion.
Mm.
And he gave them all, I think it was called a minister's permit
mm-hmm.
or something like that, which
yeah.
allowed them to work and put their children in school and get health care and start their lives while the, you know, slow paperwork, the bureaucracy was moving forward. And in some cases, it took, you know, 5 years for a person to go from an asylum seeker to having their, you know, permanent residency card. But in those 5 years, those people could start working and their kids started going to school and, you know, they settled down. Whereas a couple of decades later, this other boat comes to the other side of the country, same Tamils fleeing the same war, and the way that they're treated is completely different.
Yeah.
Even though, in the interim, it's not like the rules have changed that much. It's
right.
just what mood is the country in.
Yeah, and so the country that Mahinden comes to is obviously very different. The mood is a lot different. And so what are the conditions that people like Mahinden find themselves in? I mean, it is detention, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so heartbreaking. I mean, you know, when I started to work on the book, it was 2013, so the real boat had come in 2010, so it had been a couple of years. And I kept checking in on the numbers, and there were still people whose cases, who were still in jail, whose cases were still working their way through the system, and, you know, they were still in detention. I just can't imagine. First of all, your life is thrown into an uproar when the country that you live in goes to war, and you're physically on the run within your own country. And then you come to this new country and you're in jail, separated from the other members of your family. Like, I just, and you don't know what's going to happen. Are you going to be deported? Are you going to be allowed to stay? It just seems to me like a massive waste of resources as well on our part.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when what research has shown us is that, and what history has shown us is that for the most part, people who come as asylum seekers are allowed to stay in the country. So why wouldn't we let them start their lives and start being productive citizens?
Yeah, I'll get you to tell us about some of the other characters in the book. Priya
mm-hmm.
is a second generation Sri Lankan who represents the refugees. She's a lawyer, is that right?
Yeah, she's an articling student, so
yeah.
pretty close to being a lawyer. She's
yeah.
working toward the bar exam.
How does she view her heritage, and mm-hmm. in light of this experience with Mahinden and representing these people on the boat?
In a way, her journey, her kind of emotional journey through the book is that she comes from a family that came to Canada just before she and her brother were born. So her parents come from Sri Lanka, and they came as immigrants, so they were pretty fortunate. But when her parents left Sri Lanka for complicated reasons that I won't give away because I go into it in the book,
mm-hmm.
they sort of purposely cut themselves off from all other Sri Lankan people.
Yeah.
And so Priya has grown up in this little bubble where the only other Sri Lankan people she knows are her parents and her brother and her uncle. And so part of what happens through the course of the book is that she starts to meet other people. And there's so many other Tamil people, and they sort of say to her, well, where have you been, you know? Like,
yeah.
How come we've never seen you? And so she's kind of rediscovering that part of her heritage. And also learning things about her family and the things that happened to them during the war in Sri Lanka that they have never talked about. And then the other journey she goes on is when you meet her at the beginning of the book, she's an articling student. She's got her eye on the prize.
Yeah.
She wants to be a corporate lawyer. That's where the money is.
Uh-huh.
That's what she's in it for. It's dispassionate, you know. And then she gets kind of pulled in against her will into working in refugee law with these people, and she really doesn't want to. For most of the book, she's thinking, how quickly can I get back to my real thing, which is corporate law? And so part of it is also, it's not that she's a bad person. She just has her eye on one kind of law, and she feels like because of her skin color, she's been pulled this other direction, kind of away.
It's a fascinating character because, you know, we all know people like that, if they're not ourselves, because, I mean, my parents are Filipino. I was born here, yet there's a part of my past, my heritage, that's sort of, well, it's there, and it's not something that I've really thought about.
Yeah, because, and that's something that stayed from my original idea of what I wanted to do with this book, that idea of how the first generation, the generation that comes, the arrival generation, like Priya's parents, the way that they interact with their Sri Lankan heritage, and the way that they think of themselves as being Canadian, how that differs from the way that she and her brother, who are born here, think of themselves, and the things that are forgotten or not talked about, or the things, the kinds of stories that, there's one part in the book where Priya's father says, you know, it was really hard for us when we first came. We had so little, and your brother was born, and we didn't even have a crib yet. We had to put him, like, in a box. And these are things that, you know, they're adults now, but they were never told these stories. And Priya says, well, that's not the story we were always told. We were all, you know, and the father says, you know, other people, when we first came here, we had nothing, and other people gave us so much charity and helped us so much. And Priya says, that's not the story you always told us. You always told us we came here with nothing and we made our own success. Mm. So those, I think I'm also interested in the way that people talk about their origin stories and the way that the convenient amnesia that sometimes happens. Yeah. And I think this is not just immigrant families who have this convenient amnesia of, well, I made this all up and I pulled myself up on my own bootstraps and no one helped me do this. I think a lot of us who have been born into privilege sometimes can make the mistake of thinking that all of our success is to do with just what we did.
Yeah. And speaking of amnesia, speaking of our heritage and contending with that, Grace is another character in the book who has to unpack and understand her own family's history, right?
Yeah. So if Priya is second generation, so one generation removed from the arrival group, Grace is third generation Japanese Canadian. It was her grandparents who came on a boat to Canada, who were interned during the Second World War.
Yeah.
And there was so much shame. So I was doing a lot of research into the internment and into how the people who were interned, how they dealt with it. And, and the thing I came across was that in a lot of families, the Issei generation who were adults during the internment, they didn't want to talk about what happened, and they wanted to look to the future and move on. And it was the Nisei generation, the second generation, this would be like Grace's mother's generation, who really wanted to talk about the things that had happened to them when they were children or happened right before they were born. And so in Grace's family, what this has come to is a family amnesia, a purposeful forgetting of the things of the past, which was necessary for her grandparents, but now has this unintended detrimental effect of making Grace forget that she is also a boat person, that the ways that the country turned against her family using propaganda are the same ways that the country has turned against these newest arrivals. You know, all the propaganda about these people are all criminals, they're all illegal, there's an armada of ships just waiting, and if we act like a soft touch, we're going to be inundated. Mm. All that kind of stuff is not very different from the things that were said about the Japanese. Yeah. But because Grace has kind of, there's this family amnesia about what happened to them, it's difficult for her to empathize.
Yeah. The book has gotten a great reception from audiences across the country. And I guess that says something about where we are. In terms of, you spoke a moment ago about the moods, the mood that a country is in at a particular time, and we are in sort of an interesting one, especially in light of the refugees from Syria coming here, right?
Mm-hmm. We're in an interesting mood, but so I was chatting with a friend of mine who's an immigration lawyer, and she does a lot of work with refugees.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, one of the things the previous government did, the Harper government, was they made a list of countries where people could not claim refugee status if they were coming from those countries. So,
for example,
Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, okay, it's fine to say, well, Mexico's fine, there's not a war there. But, you know, people can leave and claim asylum for things that are not war, right?
Yeah.
Like if there's, if you've somehow gotten mixed up in something.
Criminal, yeah.
Yeah, and you're trying to escape a gang or some other, you know, in some countries it could be your sexuality that is putting you in harm's way. And so there's this list of countries, and there are other things like that, changes that were made during the last government that the present government hasn't done anything to fix.
Mm.
So it might seem, and in some ways, yes, it is a different mood, and we are definitely more welcoming and open. And I think a lot of people who looked at the MV Sunsea and said all those people are criminals look at the Syrians who are coming and don't feel that way about them. And I think that's partly to do with how the government acts and the kind of public statements that are made, which I think do affect the mood of the country. But I think there's a lot of things also that happen behind the scenes that we never hear about because they're not in the news. That also affect who's let in and that can limit people from coming in.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about The Boat People, your novel. In the course of your research, you found out that a lot of the stuff with MV Sunsea, with that boat, there was a publication ban. So that allowed you, what you didn't know, to say, allowed you to write through, right? And figure out.
I mean, at the time, so there was a publication ban, which meant that I couldn't get any access to any of the transcripts from the hearings. I'm sure there were transcripts, but I couldn't get my hands on them. Any of the news reports were so spare, there were no names. And so if I read about a mechanic in one news report and a mechanic in another news report, I didn't know it was the same person.
Mm-hmm.
There was no sense of, you know, what has happened to this person after this one detention hearing. There was no sense of continuity. And at the time, that was so frustrating for me. I just kept thinking, if I could just read about, or if I could just interview one of these people, that would really help.
Yeah.
But in retrospect, it's better that I didn't, because it meant that I had a lot of the facts in terms of how the boat was treated and what was said about it by the politicians.
Mm-hmm.
There was also a really great report that was done 5 years after that came out in 2015, which got into some of the details of the kind of backroom stuff about what the government instructed, the instructions the government gave to the Canadian Border Services Agency.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave me a lot of insight. And so it's good to have those truths as the outline. But then I was able to create the characters completely from my imagination. And I think that's just so much better. It just gave me so much freedom to do whatever I wanted with them. And I didn't feel like I had to be beholden to any one real person's true story.
Yeah, yeah. Where did you grow up? Was it Pickering?
Yeah, I grew up in Ontario in Pickering, which is just outside of Toronto.
So you mentioned you live in St. John's. How long have you lived there?
I've been there since the beginning of 2010. So it's been 8 years.
Yeah.
And, it's so funny. We moved from Toronto, and it was this cross-country, you know, move.
Uh-huh.
And the administration behind that move, the physical logistics of getting us there, and we don't have children, we don't have pets, and we didn't even have that much furniture, so we were just moving a few boxes, really.
Yeah.
It was such a pain. It was so, I remember whining and complaining about it. And then I was writing this book, and I started to think about my own parents, you know, moving from, I was born in the Middle East.
Uh-huh.
Moving from the Middle East, they had two kids. My grandmother came with us. You know, they sent boxes by ship. We came on a flight. I mean, they had to restart their lives.
Yeah.
My father had to change careers. And they just did all of that without any kind of, I was a kid, but I don't remember them complaining or anything. They just kind of went about it. They just kind of went about it like adults.
Yeah.
I had so much respect for them.
Yeah.
When I think about, like, the things that are really not difficult in my life that I complain about.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, we all do, don't we? I mean,
yeah.
That's why we have Twitter and Facebook, to complain about these things that are essentially meaningless, but, you know, at the time,
yeah.
are crises.
I mean, you know, my parents made this, you know, cross-continental move with children and, yeah.
Yeah. So then I understand, I guess you did some schooling overseas, is that right?
No.
Oh.
Well, yes, a little bit.
Yeah.
I was born in Dubai, and so I started school in Dubai, and then I came to Canada, and I think grade three was my first year here.
I thought I read somewhere that you went to school in England for a bit?
Oh, yes. So for 2 months when I was in university, I did a summer term in the UK.
I see. So I guess I read that in the Georgia Strait, that you didn't feel... nationalism is not the right word, but maybe patriotism
until you
were overseas. Is that right?
Yeah. So, and actually that was in 2009. So the year before we moved to St. John's, my husband and I had been living in Toronto.
Uh-huh.
And then he's an academic and he had finished his PhD. And then he got this postdoctoral position at Oxford in the UK. And it was just for 1 year. And so... we thought, okay, let's go and do that for 1 year. So we gave up our apartment and we moved out to the UK and lived there for a year. And it was the first time I had lived away for any real stretch of time. And it was the first time that I felt suddenly patriotic, which I've heard, talked to other people now who have lived away for a chunk of time, and they do the same thing. You don't really feel it until you go away.
Yeah.
It was a weird kind of patriotism where I loved meeting other Canadians. And I became very nostalgic for, like, CBC shows that I would never have watched if I was home.
Right.
Like, weirdly nostalgic for them.
Yeah.
And then that was 2009, and then we came back to Canada in 2010, and we came back just in time for the Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
So the whole country just blew up in terms of patriotism and nationalism. And I remember being, I mean, I was, of course, the Olympics happened here in Vancouver, and I was on the other side of the country watching it from afar, but I was just feeling so much of this patriotism and nationalism. And that was with me a few months later in the fall of 2010. So it was like just about 9 months after we had come back home. I was in Halifax for work and stayed for the weekend and went to Pier 21, which is the Canadian Museum of Immigration.
Right.
And I was walking around all of these exhibits and also thinking about, on the other side of the country, there's this boat of Tamil people who could just as easily be me, right?
Yeah.
If circumstances were just slightly different, my family and I could have been on that boat. And I was thinking about, well, how are they being treated? And so... it was this complicated feeling of patriotism where I felt proud of my country and happy to be home and also really, really grateful that I was a Canadian. Like I didn't really take my citizenship. I took my citizenship for granted in many ways until I went away somehow.
Even though
really, as an immigrant, I never really take my citizenship for granted. I mean, in our family, we always have a passport, always. We never let it run out.
Yeah.
And we always vote in every election, even if it's to scratch the ballot. And we always fill out the census, like, with pride, because these are the responsibilities of the citizenship. But I was in Halifax, and I was thinking, I'm so proud of my country, but I'm so angry at my country, too. Like, how can we act like such jerks? And I think that's what it is to be a good patriot. I think if you're a good patriot, you think, I love my country, and what can I do to make it better? And how can I find the flaws and try to fix them?
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough to say my country is the greatest, because, first of all, no country is the greatest. No country is perfect.
Right.
But I think if you're doing your job properly, if you're being a responsible patriot, then you're looking at the flaws as well.
So does writing a book like this, because it is a Canadian book, essentially, it's a Canadian story, it spans, you know, the country in terms of your own experience. You've established that you grew up in Ontario, you live in Newfoundland, the book is set in Vancouver. Does it change your perspective at all as to citizenship? I mean, this is... My read of it, I mean, it's a very blunt act of citizenship to chronicle this history, this recent history, but also to look back at the past and with anger and with sobriety, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's, I don't know, I guess I feel pretty entitled to do that. Which, I've been thinking about this recently, about, I think in some cases, probably not all, but in some cases, the arrival generation is maybe very, very grateful
mm-hmm.
and would in some ways not criticize a country that has
sure.
accepted them.
Yeah.
Whereas for someone like me who grew up here, I think I'm much more able to criticize the country in ways that outwardly and vocally in ways that sometimes I think my parents don't feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because we were recently at a Canada Reads event in St. John's,
mm-hmm.
and I was talking about this idea of a good country. It's a good country. My husband was sitting in the audience beside someone else who was a much more. It was an event that took place at the Association for New Canadians, so it was all new Canadians.
Yeah.
My husband said that he was sitting beside someone. He didn't know who it was, but it was obviously a newcomer. And when I said something like, this country is not always a good country, that person kind of frowned and shook their head.
I thought,
you know, that's one of the differences, I think, in terms of generations, right?
Yeah,
that a generation that feels like I do, that this is my country, and so that's why I feel, like, perfectly content in criticizing it. Just like I feel very content in criticizing my own family, right?
Yeah.
The comfort that you feel with that. The thing that I discovered the thing that changed about the way that I view citizenship, my citizenship, and other people arriving here in the course of writing the book is that I have so much more gratitude now than I ever did before for the fact that my parents brought me here, that I didn't have to work at it at all, that this was just given to me, the fact that we ended up in a very safe, good country. I have a new, profound sense of gratitude for that I didn't have before. And I think part of that was set up for me just in that year I spent overseas. And it's not like I was in a difficult country or a country that's so different from, I mean, I went back to the UK.
Yeah.
But there is something that happens, I think, to many people when you're away that you start to feel very patriotic in ways that you didn't before.
Well, I'm sure that I've read a lot of the reviews for this book. A lot of people are grateful to you for having written this because you've evoked a lot of important history that I think we need to think about, and you've done it through these characters that are very rich and fascinating and memorable. I can't wait to read this book. I so appreciate your time today, Sharon. Congratulations and continued good luck with the book.
Thank you so much.
The book is called The Boat People. It's published by McClelland and Stewart. Its author, Sharon Balla, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.